Couple of weeks ago, I wrote a little blog post, and that's what I'm using this morning for, my impromptu sermon. So you may have already read it, that's okay, we're going to revisit it again. And it was inspired, you know, that morning as I sat down, okay, it's the morning, Friday morning, I've got to write my blog, and before I started even thinking about it, an email came through from a friend that said, you really should look at this video. And as I'm talking now, actually, Cindy, you can start bringing that up. So, okay, I'll do that first. And I watched the video. I thought, okay, that's my blog this morning. And it was a video produced by Danish TV. How many of you have seen this video, if you know what I'm talking about? Not many of you. Good. It was produced just a couple weeks ago by Danish TV, and it opens on this large sound stage, and people are being led into this big room, and there are little demarcations on the floor. You'll notice, you can see them right there. That's an overview of the room. And they're brought into the room, and they're asked, apparently briefed ahead of time, to go to particular boxes that indicate their particular place in Danish society. So you'll see some people who are like serious blue-collar worker types, some people who are like bikers. You'll see it. Let's roll the video. It's a good one. The video left me feeling very hopeful that morning. You know, it's been a tough few weeks for a lot of folks. With the realization that this, what's pictured in the video, is precisely where we are right now in the world. Circumstances have sharply delineated our separateness from one another, as though we've been ushered into some great global gymnasium and made to stand isolated in our partitioned cells. We're presented with a challenge much like the Danes in the video. This is our time. What will we choose? I see us choosing love all over the world right now. I see us raising up those among us who have been marginalized, giving sanctuary to those seeking refuge. I see us coming together and building and strengthening bonds of friendship across cultural boundaries and imaginary walls. I see us beginning to laugh a little at the absurdity of our supposed divisions and the glaring evidence of our unity as human beings sharing this planet together. You know, at the level of DNA, there really are no races. They're just differing traits. We're the same. There's a passage from 1 Corinthians where St. Paul begins to get this idea. And he uses a really great analogy. 2,000 years ago, he couldn't bring it down to the molecular level, but you could today. And he says, if I could find the place. It says, for just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in the one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of the one Spirit. Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot would say, because I'm not a hand, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear would say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, each one as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many members, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again to the head or the feet, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the members of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and those members of the body that we think less honorable, we clothe with greater honor, and our less respectable members are treated with greater respect. Whereas our more respectable members do not need this. But God has so arranged the body, giving the greater honor to the inferior member, that there may be no dissension within the body. The members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honored, all rejoice together with it. And of course, you know, Paul was thinking in terms of this new Christian community, and maybe he saw it wider than that. I hope he did. Clearly, the vision of Jesus was for all of humanity, not just those who ended up following him as Christians. We are all one. It's a funny thing, you know. The rest of the universe seems to know this. You know, the whole dance of the universe, the planets and their alignments and their dance seem to know this. The earth itself seems to know this. Somehow, we've become that part of the universe that has forgotten that we're the body. As I was writing the talk, I started thinking about the yin-yang symbol, the Taoist symbol, of the two opposites in their endless swirling dance. And you can't see it, but there's a gray background there. It's a little hard to see, but brings out the fact that there's also a black outline around it. And in Taoism, that's important too, because it symbolizes the oneness surrounding that duality, that dance of duality. They're within the one. They're circumscribed by that oneness, the source of all. And there's what I always loved about the symbol is those two dots. You know, the black dot in the white area and the white dot in the black area. There's part of the negative in the positive. There's part of the positive in the negative. Sometimes the symbol of yin-yang is shown as two fish. Here's an example of that. Swimming in this endless circle. And as I was thinking about it, I thought, maybe there comes a moment when the white fish uses its black eye, uses its wisdom eye, and notices in the black fish, ah, I am in you. And the black fish notices the white fish, ah, you are also in me, and I in you. As though they've begun to understand that they're part of this oneness that circumscribes them. So I'm feeling hopeful because that ineffable moment feels closer to me for humanity, where we make that realization. Every action of love draws it closer, draws it nearer. Every fear that we release draws it nearer. Every letting go of our guard, as you saw in that video, you could tell the moments. You could tell when they came into the room, there was that feeling, you know, like those people over there, you know, that you're not so comfortable with. And then in the end, when they're brought together and you see the smiles and you feel the realization and people applauding the bisexual guy, you know? And it feels to me like the time we're in is bringing us closer to that moment for all of us. Decades ago, I was a big fan of Pete Seeger, you know. You all know Pete. Left us a couple of years ago. And I went to see him as many times as I could in my 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, while he was still around. And I remember back in the 70s, I heard him do Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now. You know the song. And, you know, it's a song about being disillusioned with life and with love and coming to a moment of self-awareness, growing up a bit from her young years. So I'll sing you just a bit of her song, and I'll do a verse that Pete threw in at the end, which really caught me off guard, and so much so that I went home thinking about it and wanted to remember what the words were, and I thought, I'll write him. I wrote him a letter. I knew he lived in Beacon, New York. I put Pete Seeger, Beacon, New York, in the zip code. I thought, it's a small town. They know who he is, right? A couple weeks later, I got a postcard that he had handwritten with the words to that verse. So you'll hear it in a minute. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, a dizzy dancing way you feel when every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way. Now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. See, it's like kind of being still in that box. I've looked at love from both sides, from give and take. And still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all. So there's really, and you think about it, there's two kinds of love in a way. There's that eros, that romantic kind of love, which if that's your focus in life, disillusionment is going to come up a lot. And I think Pete knew about that greater love of agape, of unconditional love. And he wrote this little verse for her. Daughter, daughter, don't you know? You're not the first to feel just so. But let me say before I go, it's worth it anyway. And then we all will realize the whole world feels this way. We've all been living upside down and turned around with love unfound until we turn and face the sun. Yes, all of us, everyone. Until we turn and face the sun. Until that moment comes when we realize the greater whole, when we realize the me that is in you and the you that is in me. I think we're getting there. I think we come soon, I hope. I think it can happen in our lifetime where we come to that greater realization, that awakening. And we become like the beings in this little Rumi poem that I was writing this this little blog. I thought I had the book with the Rumi poems in it next to me, and I flipped open to this. And I realized he's actually talking about the yin-yang symbol. I don't know if he was even knew that. He said, God and I have become like two giant fat people living in a tiny boat. We keep bumping into each other and laughing. That's the poem. God and I have become like two giant fat people living in a tiny boat. We keep bumping into each other and laughing. That's that moment. That's that aha when we realize when the white fish looks at the black fish and the black fish looks at the white fish and they go, oh, we're all one. Thank you. Thank you for all the ways that you jostle me in this little boat. Thank you.